This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest,
Sue Welsh, Teen Post, Watts Towers Arts Center, Los Angeles. Tonight's subject, can the Watts teenagers really improve themselves?
You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Los Angeles, California is Miss Sue Welsh. Sue is a Teen Post director of the Watts Tower Arts Center. Now, Miss Welsh is a white Catholic and an ex-school teacher who now devotes her life to working with the Negro teenagers in the Watts area. If you'd like to ask Sue a question or make a comment on tonight's topic, can the Watts teenagers really improve themselves, give us a call here at Night Call. Our national number is area code 313-846-6601. Our Night Call operators are on duty, our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. You may reverse the charges. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Miss Welsh, what is a teen post?
Basically, Russ, the teen post is a place where teenagers can come in the community and find the kind of opportunities that they would like to have in discovering who they are and what they can do.
What do you mean, discovering who they are?
Basically, one of the problems that has existed in the community has been that many of the students who are unable to be reached by their teachers and counselors and the general agencies and institutions in the community, these teenagers have needed very desperately some place where they could begin to unfold and blossom, in a sense, and find out exactly what they were capable of doing in many ways. Now, the teen post originated from the teenagers themselves in Los Angeles. Around May of 1965, a number of teenagers met at a high school in East Los Angeles and were asked point blank, what is it that you would like to do during the summer? And their answers came back with things including drama, opportunities to go places, jobs, desires to participate in community life, and even more specialized opportunities like auto mechanics and so forth. So the agencies in the community who were interested in youth developed teen programs and submitted these to the Economic Opportunity Act for a summer teen crash program. Well, this was sort of bogged down when the powers that be in Los Angeles were unable to decide who would do the administering and distribution of the funds. And so from June to August, we were all hopeful for teen posts and were not receiving any. And then a community-based organization known as the Federation of Community Centers and Settlements began to negotiate separately with Washington to become the administrators of a teen program. And we were very fortunate to have a teen post program beginning August 2nd.
Now, are teen posts only located in the Negro areas of Los Angeles?
No, the teen post is countywide. In fact, there were 120 such teen posts operating in churches, parks, recreation centers, all over Los Angeles County. But with particular emphasis in East Los Angeles, where we have a high concentration of persons of Mexican descent, and in South Los Angeles, where we had a concentration of Negroes.
Sue, you're a white girl, and you're working in the Watts area. Now, why are you working in an all-Negro area?
Well, I suppose I should give a bit of history about myself. 5 years ago, I sought a position with the Los Angeles City Board of Education, and it just so happened that they placed me in the community of Watts. At that time, I had no real awareness of the community, and personally, I had very little contact with any minority person.
Were you afraid?
No, I was. I was afraid only in that here I was going to be confronted with the challenge of transferring and communicating with young people, and in an area and in a community in which I had really no contact and no information and no experience. So my fear was more of my own inadequacy than of the people with whom I would be working. As I began teaching, I realized the urgency of knowing what kind of community I was a part of. And so I became very interested in finding out about the children, their homes, their families, the kind of community agencies that were operating. And as a result of that, I became increasingly involved in community efforts. The balance, I think, and one of the reasons that I am in the community now in another capacity are the young people. I find the contact with them very stimulating. I find that their aspirations for themselves and for the community demonstrate a tremendous hope, and it's very compelling to be a part of that hopefulness.
Do you think the Negro kids are much the same as white kids?
I think, essentially, the Negro kids are much the same as white kids in terms of their humanness and or their humanity. I think their experiences have been very different, and this, of course, has affected their behavior and their total, their overall living experience as human beings.
So you're aware that many white people have a stereotype image of Negroes, correct?
Yes.
Now, why is it that so many white people are basically afraid of Negroes, and particularly Negro teenagers?
Well, from my own experience, I think the essential reason is that the white person in this country, as a result of the history of our nation with respect to race relations, is plagued by the myth that Negroes are inferior to white people. And though many white people have not developed any real specific attitude with respect to Negro people when they haven't had any contact with them, as soon as they confront Negroes, this very deep-rooted and insidious kind of feeling emerges. And white people have real difficulty in knowing, you know, how to do anything with it or how to deal with it. And so they find themselves confronted with it, and it's a highly emotional kind of reaction. And I find that essentially they're unable to work out any true kind of relationship with Negroes, so that it becomes either tolerance or overworked do-gooding.
Can the Watts teenager really improve himself? Our guest is Miss Sue Welsh, and if you'd like to join us here on Night Call, our number is area code 313-846-6601. Sue, do you feel that you've grown as a human being working with Negro kids?
Definitely, Russ. In fact, I think for myself, and I want to make this point very definitely to those persons who are listening, that many people begin to think that anyone who is white and finds himself working in a Negro community is some kind of crusader or missionary.
A do-gooder.
Yeah, and I feel contrarily that the reason for my being in Watts is very simple, that this is where I must be, and this is where I have learned in the last 5 years a great deal about myself and what my capacity is to be with other people. And I'm really convinced that I'm not helping Negro teenagers as much as I am a part of presenting to them alternatives from which they can choose and decide what they wish to do with their lives.
Well, how does a Negro teenager relate to you, a young white gal?
We have established a wonderful relationship over the years. I have the advantage of having been teaching in the community for 5 years, and so I know many, many teenagers, and as a teen post director, I am now meeting kind of teenagers that I really wasn't able to make very good contact with in the classroom.
And what kind are you meeting now, Sue?
Well, I'm talking now about the teenager who lives on the fringe of school life and community life, who looks upon any kind of community activity as square and out of it, and who now begins to see the possibilities of involvement for himself in a kind of grouping that isn't contaminated by squares.
Now, tell me what a square is as far as a Negro teenager is concerned. Is that a whitey?
Not always. I think it's really someone who really doesn't give this teenager an opportunity to be himself, who doesn't really understand where the teenager is in terms of the kinds of things he enjoys.
Sue, let me ask you this.
Right.
Say that I feel, you know, a little bit guilty about our treatment of Negroes, and I decide that I want to do some good along these lines, and I go down to Watts and I invite a Negro teenager or a couple of them over to my home for dinner, and we have them at dinner for a night or a day, and we go to a show, and we chit-chat and things of this nature, and then I take them back to the car, dump them off, and more or less say, well, you know, I've done something. I've really made a contribution to understanding. What does the Negro think of this type of person?
Well, I think they feel that you're simply a guilty white person who wants to unload the burden on his mind and then split, as it were, from the community. And they're pretty hip to this kind of white person because most of the white persons in the community have been people who have been there to take rather than to give.
Now, what do you mean by to take rather than to give?
Well, I mean the professional white person who either runs a business, and the business community in Watts has a very sad history of non-involvement in terms of community concerns.
That's strange. Wasn't it mostly the businesses that got the brunt of the riot?
Yes. Well,
you think this is one reason?
This is what I said, that the business community rarely took an interest in the people whom they were serving in terms of customers. And there were many times that the youth with whom I was working would go and ask businessmen for support for different projects, and they got a half-hearted kind of response or no response at all. And I think this is one of the indications of why the community reacted sharply to the businessmen during the recent protest.
Our guest tonight, Miss Sue Welsh. Our topic, can the Watts teenagers really improve themselves? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Look, I'm quite self-sufficient. I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest is Miss Sue Walsh, and she is a young lady who is a teen post director out in the Watts Tower Art Center. A young white gal who gave up school teaching to work with Negro teenagers. And we've been discussing what it's like to be a white gal working with Negro teenagers, and we're hoping that we can get to the point of what teenagers can do to really improve themselves. So if you'd like to join us here on Night Call, we'd like to have you. Our national Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. You may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. So let's hear what you think about this. After all, the show is for you. Night Call, area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open, and we invite you to join Night Call. Miss Welsh, I have a caller in Indianapolis, Indiana, standing by. A listener on WFBM, Mr. Robert Snopp. Good evening, Bob. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Well, I hear you. Thank you. And I wasn't sure that you really put the calls on.
Okay.
But I'm glad to hear that you do. Yeah, I think this is your show every night, and I think it's wonderful.
You're very kind, Bob. Thank you.
I was just wondering, the other night they were talking about, I listened to several nights, about the white people having their Negroes 13 to 1. I have many friends that are Negroes, and no, nothing against them in the world. But I just wonder, are they talking about being the hell down class? If it was reversed, and the Negroes had the Americans, the white Caucasian, 13 to 3, what it would be like?
Well, that's an interesting way to pose the problem. Sue?
I didn't quite get the total...
Well, Bob was asking the question, how would the Negroes treat the white man if the ratio were reversed, if there were 13 Negroes for every white person? Do you think they would react different? Would it be a different culture?
Well, first I want to say that I think the reason Mr. Stamp is asking the question is, and it's a question that others have asked, I think it reveals the feeling that somehow we can forget how the white man has treated the Negro in this country by, you know, kind of creating a situation that doesn't exist. I think it's a hypothetical kind of question, and I can answer, you know, that question from my own experience about how human beings would act toward one another regardless of race. But I think that kind of question really doesn't help, because we only want to hear that Negroes would then crush white men because of the fact that the same thing happened to them. I think that it would be much more valid to think in terms of why it still persists in this country that Negroes are mistreated by persons who are white, why they are subject to discrimination in employment, in housing, in educational opportunities, and not, you know, worry what they're going to do if somehow the tables are turned. Because I think that, first of all, numerically is not going to happen. And that Negroes do not want to be rich and white. They simply want to be free to have the kind of opportunities that Robert has had and that his family has had.
Bob, would you care to comment?
Yeah,
could you speak up a little bit, Bob, please?
Well, there is, I think, 19 million, 18 million Negroes in America.
Mm-hmm, 20 million.
Why do the Negroes, with 18 million, Americans, the Caucasians started out with a lot less than that, and they built themselves in the country. Now, why does the Negro want what the white man has that they don't have, that he could have?
Well, now, let's consider for just a moment what every human being should have as far as developing himself. What would you say a person should have in terms of opportunity?
Well, I don't know. Opportunity is only what you take. And I think anyone can take anything they want if they want it bad enough.
Regardless of the person next to you?
Well, if their credit is good, they can do what they want, I think. I don't see no reason why anyone that pays the bills and wants money to borrow money to start a business of their own, why they can't borrow money and go in business themselves.
Well, what you're talking about now is something that we as Americans pride ourselves on, and that is the initiative and enterprise that each of us should have in developing ourselves. But what you fail to appreciate, and which I think is most essential to the whole question of race relations in this country, is that we have, since the beginning of our history, in terms of relating to the Negro people who came to this country as slaves, we have systematically denied them the opportunity to grow as human beings that we have been able to have ourselves, so that we could take initiative. And furthermore, I think that we have to consider that we cannot be free and step on someone else, because we are in fact living under a false concept of what freedom is. And this is really the essence of our problems in this country, I believe, that we fail to see that when a person is denied the opportunities that we enjoy as Americans, and that we sound off about our freedom to other countries in the world, and at the same time, the opportunities that we would like the South Vietnamese people to have, we do not have taking place in our country among minorities, then we're living, you know, under a pretense.
You're really saying, in effect, Sue, that Negroes do not have the opportunities to advance that white people have.
This is essentially the problem still.
Bob, I want to thank you for calling Night Call, and thank you for your comments. Bob, I have some other callers, and we're going to be on the series tomorrow night also, so maybe you can call us again tomorrow night.
I called about 3 nights ago, and this is the first time I've gone through it all.
I see.
But I think you have a wonderful program, and I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you very, very much, Bob. We appreciate you calling. Good night. Mr. Bob Snopp from Indianapolis, Indiana, listening on WFBM. And let's go back out to Indianapolis for Mr. Donald Rowland. Good evening, Don. You're on Night Call. Your comments, sir?
I'm from Lafayette.
You're from Lafayette, Indiana, home of Purdue.
Yeah.
Okay.
My question is somewhat like Bob's. I was wondering about the video family in general, what they could do in society if they limited their family to, say, two or three kids like the average white family, and therefore the family could give their children what they needed in life, you know, educational wise, basic, general.
I got that.
Did you get it? Fine.
Yeah.
Sue?
That question is a kind of visionary one, in a sense, and I'm primarily concerned, as I think you are, with the conditions that prevail right now for those persons who are living and do have families, which do number, you know, plus 10. Now, the limitation of families and control, birth control, is, to me, a question that involves, you know, planning and the kind of visionary efforts, even to be perhaps incorporated into an anti-poverty program. And essentially, I think that's an individual decision that people must make themselves to how they wish to plan their families. And that kind of family planning will most likely come when the social agencies make more of an impact in the community and determine that this is one of the answers to problems of poverty. But I think immediately we find ourselves confronted with inadequate housing, unemployment, some very dire cases of hunger and poverty. And these are the challenges that are offered to us now. And I think this is really where the poverty program must begin to take its effect.
So, as I understood Don's question, he was asking, why don't Negroes limit their family? Isn't this correct, Don?
Yes.
I wonder if you have had a chance to read, I think it's the latest Newsweek magazine, and in there they have shown that Chicago, which has had a very high Negro population, for the first time in many years, Negroes are leaving Chicago, and also, as the economic condition of the Negro improves, the Negro family unit, we find that the birth rate is beginning to drop for Negro families in general, and that there also is a correlation between the number of children that poor whites have similar to poor Negroes. So this is not solely a Negro problem.
I didn't see that particular article. But
yeah, I think it's out this week, as I recall.
I think that's a very good point.
Don?
Yeah?
Did you have another question?
No, that was it.
I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Okay, thank you.
Good night. Mr. Don Rowland from Indianapolis, Indiana, listener on WFBM. Sue, when you're working with these teenagers, and particularly the Negro teenager, again, we tend to think of Negroes as being rather loose morally. Has this been your experience?
No, it hasn't been my experience to take note of any loose morality from the teenagers. I think, essentially, the morals of the teenagers reveal themselves in terms of the kinds of experiences they have had with respect to family life and church life, and what effect these standards have had upon them as individuals. One, I think, important point that I would like to make in that respect is that as the teenagers begin to see the possibilities for themselves in really doing things for themselves, that their time then becomes a much more creative kind of time. And while they can enjoy some of the aspects of their own kind of teen culture that they have created for themselves, including the music and the dance that is so enjoyable to them, that they begin to appreciate themselves in other ways. And I think it's been my experience that once we have really created the kind of opportunities for improvement, the teenagers begin to demonstrate a real concern for themselves, which is, I think, is what we're really after.
All right, Sue. We're saying that teenagers can help themselves to some degree. But how many white people in Los Angeles are actually concerning themselves with Negro teenagers? Or teenagers anywhere, for that matter?
Well, you know, I think this is, your last comment is so important. I think adults have a problem generally with respect to teenagers, and that is they don't understand, you know, why teenagers act the way or feel the way that they do with respect to adults. And this is across the board. This is a problem that adults have relating to the youth community in our city. I think that the question that is on our topic this evening, you know, can watch teenagers really improve themselves, is being answered daily. And let me just review the history of a particular group of students in the Watts area who took upon themselves over 2 years ago the task of improving the community of Watts. These teenagers were senior and senior high school students. They used to come over to my classroom after school and we would talk about what was happening in Birmingham since around 1963. And they were quite concerned with the total problem of the Negro and white relationship in this country. And at the same time, they wanted to determine in their own minds how they could relate it to the place where they were. That was Watts, Los Angeles, California, 1963. And after a couple of efforts to form a civil rights group among themselves, they decided that the armchair analysis of civil rights was really not the kind of thing that was needed in their community. And so they formed the Student Committee for Improvement in Watts in January 1964. And they took particular interest in the physical conditions prevailing in the community. They surveyed the community. They particularly concerned themselves with a number of abandoned buildings and sites that had pockmarked the face of the community for years, and no one seemed to be too concerned about them. They got up a petition for three of the buildings to be demolished. In fact, I think they got carried away. They wanted to demolish anything that looked, pre-1940.
Our guest tonight, Miss Sue Welsh. Our topic, can the Watts teenagers really improve themselves? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call. where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, and here is host Russ Gibb.
We're continuing our week-long look at the Los Angeles riots. Our guest is Miss Sue Welsh. She's a Teen Post director out in the Watts Tower Art Center area of Los Angeles. And our topic, can the Watts teenagers really improve themselves? Sue has said many things tonight. Basically, she's saying that teenagers are teenagers, whether they're white or whether they're colored. And if you'd like to express your opinion on what teenagers can do to improve themselves, give us a call here at Night Call. Our lines are open and our Night Call operators are on duty, and we invite you to join us. Area code 313-846-6601. Now, it's very easy to call us here on Night Call. Just pick up the old telephone and dial us direct. And if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. And we invite you to join us on Night Call. What do you think about the Negro problem? Do you think that white people really fear the Negro, or vice versa? Let's hear you express your opinion. Sue, I have a caller out in Indianapolis, Indiana, Mr. Jack Hahn, and he's listening on WFBM. Good evening, Jack. How are you, sir? You're on Night Call.
Thank you. I had a question I would like to ask Sue. This summer I was traveling through the South, and I seemed to talk to a lot of white teenagers down there, and they said that the one thing that they objected to most was the intermarriage between the whites and the Negroes. And the reason they had for it was that they thought the Negroes were trying to raise their status, social status, and so forth. And I was wondering if Sue had found this problem out there.
That's a very common question, I think. And I think it's telling, too, because I feel many white people believe that one of the reasons why Negroes are seeking their opportunities and their civil rights and liberties in this country is because they wish to intermarry eventually. I think, first of all, that it is a fact that most Negroes, and if not all Negroes, are not interested in intermarriage, and that this particular fear that white people have is the result of our own inability to see the freedom movement in this country as it really is. That is, it's essentially a struggle for freedom and opportunity to do what is valid for every human being who wants to call himself an American and be a participant in our society. So I think that this fear of that integration will result automatically in unlimited intermarriage and aggression on the part of Negroes to find white companions or mates is really fiction. And if we can simply appreciate what the reality of the struggle is, I think we will be better able to be willing to yield some of the rights that we have so very flagrantly denied to Negroes.
Jack, would you like to comment?
No, not really. I didn't have any comment. I was just really curious to find out what Sue thought. Because
let me add something else. That we have found that many of the Negro teenagers, are interested in meeting white kids and white teenagers. And in fact, we have had many exchanges between our teen post and teenagers in neighboring white communities on the west side of Los Angeles. And it's interesting to see how the teenagers come together, share their experiences as young people, and how they operate their various youth groups and councils. And one of the problems that exists is not so much how the white youth feels toward Negro youth, but the attitude of the white parents toward the Negroes in terms of any kind of social contact that their children would have. For example, we invited a number of teenagers from a white community to come back to Watts and participate in a dance that we held as the final dance at the end of the summer. Now, these teenagers had been very kind and receptive to us when we came to their community, and we had a wonderful evening of sports and shared a variety of experiences. But the parents of the white kids were not willing for their children to come out to watch in the evening the social affair. And whereas many of the teenagers were really looking forward to seeing their friends again.
Well, now, why were the white parents afraid to let
the
kids...
Because the white parents believe that Negroes wish to intermarry, and that is the end product of their total struggle and effort. And all I can say is that the more contact that whites would have with Negroes would help them to see that that is not a goal. This may happen, and of course, this becomes a very individual and personal kind of experience.
Suba, do you feel that it's only the intermarriage thing? Through my experience, it's been that many whites are afraid to go into Negro areas because we have, again, this idea that there is more violence in Negro areas than there is in white areas.
Well, let's say that there has been in any community that is deprived and impoverished a more naked kind of the sheer physical existence, which goes from an ostrich-like agony to the moneylender. And that there is a difference between the community of Watts and, let's say, the community of Beverly Hills in this city.
You're saying, in effect, then, that I could go into a poor or a white slum area and meet just as much violence. Is this what you're saying?
Yes, I think so.
So really, the Watts riots are not solely the responsibility of Watts. It could happen other places in the United States.
I think that when people find themselves unable to have any vehicle for expression and any kind of outlet to begin to enjoy life and living, that they're going to protest very violently and very adamantly. And I think that we know that as a result of the history of racial discrimination in this country, that Negroes have been, in a calculated way, denied the opportunity of participation in our mainstream of living. And that, for this reason, Watts becomes the result of that 300 years.
Jack, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you think that when a Negro and a white marries, that actually the Negro is stepping up socially, or is the white coming down socially?
Well, my personal opinion is that I think that neither the Negro is stepping up nor the white is stepping down. I think, well, I firmly believe that that people should look upon it as if two whites had married or else two Negroes. I think that in time to come, that this is eventually what's going to happen because of our increase in Negro population and our ties between the white and the Negro will be, well, they have to be come closer, because I don't think that they're going to get too much farther apart. And I think that this should be just looked upon as a normal marriage rather than one stepping up or the other stepping down.
Jack, thank you for your opinion.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for calling NICAW. Mr. Jack Hahn from Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFDM. And Sue, let's go out to Denver, Colorado now. We have a listener on KTLN, Mr. Ed Patterson. Good evening, Ed. You're on night call. Your comments, sir.
Right.
Yes, sir.
I listen to it a great deal. I would like to ask...
Could you speak up a little bit, Ed? You'll practically have to shout into the telephone.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, a little bit better.
I would like to ask Ms. Walsh if she's familiar with...
Are you familiar with that book?
Yes, I am.
Can Ms. Walsh give us any more background about it? The book,
well, I think we can. Ed, I'm going to ask that you hang up the telephone because the connection is very poor, and Sue will respond to your question over the air. Will that be all right?
Yes, I'd like a little background about that book and maybe another point of view.
All right, fine. Thank you, Ed. Mr. Ed Patterson from Denver, Colorado. Sue, you want to comment on that particular book?
Yes, I am familiar with the book, and I have not, in fact, I just received a copy of it recently. I haven't read all of it, but I am reading it. And my first comment is that I think the author should have waited at least a few more years before he began to write about the kind of situation in which he was teaching. He was teaching in... non-Negro school in the South Los Angeles area for 2 years, and that seemed to qualify him to make a number of judgments about the student population, which I think reveals two things about the author. First is that I think he went into teaching in the Negro area thinking that somehow he was going to save some of the Negro youth from themselves and from their environment.
Is this the do-gooder attitude coming out again?
I believe so. And I think he found that he was simply confronted with the reality of a number of young persons who have been isolated from a good portion of the living and doing that takes place in the life of an American citizen. And essentially have created their own kind of world. And he was unable to be effective in that world and became very disillusioned and very disgusted and very frustrated. And I think he kind of took revenge on the young people by writing this particular book.
Our guest tonight, Miss Sue Welsh. Our topic, can the Watts teenagers really improve themselves? You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America! Busy America! Busy making money! Busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with the you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment?
Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line? Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by your Council of Churches. This is Night Call, And here is host, Russ Gibb.
Miss Sue Welsh is our guest tonight on Night Call, and Sue is a Teen Post director out in the Watts Tower Arts Center area in Los Angeles, California. Our topic, can the Watts teenagers really improve themselves? And we've been going around and around tonight on the idea that Negro kids are basically isolated. And, in fact, for that matter, all teenagers are basically isolated from adults. And we're wondering what we can do about this. How can we break down this ghetto type of existence that so many Negroes, or minority groups for that matter, in the United States have to live in, or with? If you'd like to express your opinion, give us a call here at Night Call. Our Night Call lines are open, and we invite you to join us here. Our Night Call number is area code 313-84-666-01. Remember, you may dial us direct, gentle people, and if you wish, you may call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call number again, area code 313-84-666-01. Let's hear from you. What are you thinking about? So, we were talking about this book about that a white schoolteacher wrote about his experiences teaching colored kids. And
because I think the book pointed out the vacuum and the gap in terms of information about really what is the problem in the minority schools of our city, and I think this is true of most of the minority schools across the country. If I may give some of my experience, when I began teaching in the Watts area in 1960, in what I call the pioneer days when nobody was really thinking about Watts, some critical thoughts come to my mind, which not only reflect upon the majority community's attitude toward Watts, but also connect to recent revolts. Because for a long time, most of the administrative personnel at the Board of Education who are responsible for placing teachers had really no concept of the community or the youth of Watts to whom they assign their teachers. And therefore, there was never any intelligent orientation program for teachers emanating from the board itself. And it's unfortunate, but generally true, that the attitude downtown, and I mean the down at the board, was and to a large extent remains ignorant of the needs of minority youth. For example, the particular school in which I taught, the green and pink oases top down in the community. It's a beautiful plant whose program is designed for about 10% of the student population, which has attained some basic skills and some self-awareness. The children who have reached junior high school, with a very weak foundation and basics, find themselves on the fringe of the learning process. They rarely achieve or improve and become discipline problems. Now, I should point out, and not in self-defense, that there are many competent teachers in the schools in Watts and South Los Angeles, but they are rendered ineffective by the lack of specialized and creative programming when they are attempting to transfer knowledge to unskilled youth.
In other words, you're saying that we build these beautiful schools and we have beautiful programs for maybe middle-class kids, but that the minority groups really do not fit into this mold and that they need the basics more than they need some of the, what we might call, frills, and I put that word frills in quotes.
Yes, and I think, see, Kendall came in contact with this situation, and rather than looking at the administration, either the local one or that is to say the school and the program that emanated from the Board of Education, he tended to focus all of the blame on the teenagers. And the major problem is that the teachers do not have the kind of program that would make them effective in the classroom. For example, last semester I was teaching world history to seventh graders who are reading 4 or 5 years below their grade level. There was really no textbook that I could use that was interesting. In fact, some of the junior high history texts are so dull that they encourage illiteracy. And in all honesty, I have found it impossible, and so have many other teachers, to teach a required course of study which is geared for a 25% elite student group and which does not meet the immediate needs of such a class. And I think this happens in every metropolitan minority school.
Sue, you mentioned that the whites are now concerned about the riot area of Watts. Does it bug you or does it bug the Negro that only now, after they've rioted or revolted, as you said, that the white man seems concerned about the area?
Well, yes, I think that that in a way we're bugged by the superficial interest that seems to be evident on the part of local political persons who really knew what was going on within the community and knew the conditions, but never took any real initiative in involving the community in its own progress, in its own, you know, solving of its own problems.
Sue, we have a caller from Denver, Colorado,
right.
A listener on KTLN, Miss Susan Anderson. Good evening, Susie. You're on Night Call.
Yes. Hello.
How are you?
Oh, just fine, and I'm certainly enjoying the program. I'm enjoying Miss Susan's talk, and I'd like to say something to her.
Please do.
Yes. Miss Susan?
Yes?
Heard on the radio about you being a teacher. Are you trying to help the young folks in California? And I think that's the most wonderful thing that you could do, to try to help the young people of today, because so many of them seem like are going astray, murdering, going to the pen, and doing first one thing and then the other. And I think when someone can get their attention enough to try to teach them the right way in this evil, I think you are most wonderful.
Well, there's a compliment for you, Sue.
I appreciate that, and I think it's as simple as the teenagers knowing that we care about them as individuals.
I can't have you.
Well, Susie, can I suggest that if you'll go back to your radio and if you'll hang up the phone, that Sue will respond and you'll be able to hear a little bit better.
My radio's off.
I see.
It isn't on.
Right. Well, I think if you go back to it and turn it on and hang up your telephone now, that you'll be able to hear. The connection is a little bit poor.
Turn my radio on?
Yeah, and then Sue will make a response to you after you've hung up your phone, okay?
Yes.
All right. Thank you for calling. Sue, do you want to respond to Miss Anderson's comment?
Yes, well, what I wanted to say to her, and I think that there are many, many teachers, many people who are working in the community who have been involved in working along with youth, minority youth in particular, who will appreciate her thoughts with respect to me, because I think we are all interested in letting the teenagers know that someone does care about them, that someone is interested in them, that someone does see that they have potential. And when the question this evening being, you know, can Watts teenagers improve themselves, I want to say emphatically that they have been doing so for many years, and that they are doing so right now at this very moment.
Sue, we have another caller in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Robert Hertz. Good evening, Bob. Welcome to Night Call, and speak right up, sir.
Thank you. I have just a question which I don't think was covered tonight. Could the young lady tell us something about the attitude of the young people she works with toward her?
Sue? What was the attitude of the youngsters that worked with you? How did they take to a white gal working with Negro kids?
Well, first of all, in the beginning, I think that they were particularly anxious to determine really how I felt about them. They're very much aware of being Negro and of the fact that someone who is teaching them is white. And at the same time, the saving factor which brought us together was that they accepted me as a person who was interested in them. And of course, I had to prove that I really cared about them, and because of the, the difficulty really in getting to know 35 young people in one class, which would, you know, come like 150 all day, one, you know, isn't always as, you can't always get as close to the children as you would like to, but there were many opportunities to let them know that I did care about them, and I think they began to accept my interest as a true and valid one. When this happened, the word, as it were, you know, would spread that, you know, this particular person really cares about us.
Do they have a nickname for you?
As I became increasingly involved in the community, it was evident that the young people appreciated the fact that I didn't always leave at 3:30 in the afternoon, that they might even see me walking down 103rd Street at 5 o'clock in the evening, or visiting someone's home, or, you know, being involved in a community program such as the Student Committee for Improvement in Watts, which I mentioned earlier.
Sue, you mentioned this 5 o'clock time. It's my understanding that most white people try and get out of the Watts area before 5. Is that correct?
Well, I think this was standard procedure for a long time. And then, I know that at the present time, I think that most white people who are in the area now working with people are not particularly concerned about what time they leave. But for the white person who was a professional, be he policeman, businessman, teacher, the time to leave was, by 5. And I wish that some of the people listening could have, maybe they can visualize in their minds a whole business community leaving in the evening, locking its gates so that 103rd Street looked like some kind of prison. I think this had a real effect on the teenagers and on the community, that the businessmen really couldn't trust their stores being unlocked overnight before they came back the next day.
Well, Mr. Bob Hertz from Denver, Colorado, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. Bob was listening on KTLN. Sue, in 30 seconds, do you think that the white and the Negro can ever come together on common ground?
Yes, and I think this is beginning to happen. I think one of the values of what happened in Watts recently in South Los Angeles is the fact that all of the pretense of relationships were ripped away, and we finally came and looked at one another for the first time.
Sue, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night. Miss Sue Welsh, a teen post director from the Watts area in Los Angeles. Tomorrow night on Night Call, we have the Reverend L.L. White. He's a Negro pastor, a Negro who claims that he forgot what it was to be a Negro. And our topic, will Negroes riot again? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.